The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, for better or worse, Ernest Hemingway has come to be synonymous with ideas of supreme masculinity, machismo and virility. But when Hemingway was knocked down during a friendly boxing bout, it not only caused serious damage to his own pride, but also irrevocably hurt his relationship with another famous writer, F. Scott Fitzgerald. Now, to tell us more, I'm joined by Cameron Hill from Off the Ball. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, set the scene for us. Boxing in the 1920s, how regulated was it? I mean, was it boxing as we know it today?
Yeah, we've talked about boxing in the early 20th century and the idea of it still being illegal, pugilism still being big. But by the 20s, it's kind of become, for want of a better phrase, cool. Like, Hemingway's getting into this, just like people who are getting into kneecap now. Like, it's happened now. You're okay. Not avant-garde. And in July 1921, heavyweight champion of the world, Jack Dempsey of the US, took on France's Georges Carpentier in the first championship fight to be sanctioned by the World Boxing Association, which had been founded only a few months before.
So this is the first properly regulated fight.
This is huge. And the narrative is there. You've got Carpentier, who's the darling of the ladies, handsome, stylish, French, a decorated World War I hero. Dempsey was portrayed, on the other hand, as this thuggish street fighter. He had been accused of dodging the draft for World War I when the US entered. That was kind of unfair. He was actually exempt from the draft because he had a dependent wife, but they characterized him as the villain of the piece. And everyone thought that Carpentier was going to win, including Hemingway. He was writing in the Toronto Daily Star at the time, saying that anyone who thinks that Dempsey has the upper hand on Carpentier is talking bunk and twaddle of the worst kind,
he said. The problem was that Carpentier will weigh in at 176 pounds and Dempsey is 10 pounds heavier.
Yes, but as Hemingway says, Carpentier has beaten men that would have chased Dempsey out of the ring. But the cry of the critics is, he has no defence, he's just a swinger. Dempsey will murder him. It's championitis, he called it.
So what happened?
Well, Dempsey won. So in front of 90,000 people at Boyle's 30 Acres.
That's huge.
Huge. Loads of women are going to this. This is an unprecedented fight in a number of fronts. And Dempsey floors Carpentier in the fourth round, retaining his heavyweight title. We reckon that the gate receipts totaled well over $1 million. First ever seven-figure fight in boxing. And it's supposedly the first ever sports commentary.
But not a commentary as we know it.
No. So RCA were trying to broadcast this on radio, but AT&T, who ran the telephone lines, wouldn't let them. They saw them as direct competitors. So what they did was a guy called Major J. Andrew White commentated down a phone line to a high-speed telegraph operator in the transmission station. He would type out the commentary to be read out by an engineer and broadcast to theatres, schools, halls, whoever had a transmitter. So our first ever sports broadcast.
It's kind of commentating by proxy. Major J. Andrew White is saying all the words, the original words, and then they've been read out by people unknown later on.
And he had to talk for 4 hours straight. And at the end, he'd found that the line had disconnected and was shocked. And where did you leave me? And it's, thankfully, they said, when Dempsey has retained the belt, so he didn't have to start over.
Now, Ernest Hemingway, he loved boxing.
Yes. Along with bullfighting, hunting, fishing, he felt boxing was the ideal case study for supreme masculinity and machismo. So anyone who knows anything about Hemingway knows that masculinity and performative masculinity is a big deal for him. He famously told journalist Josephine Herbst, my writing is nothing, my boxing is everything. So he really wanted to be this incredible boxer and align himself with masculine pursuits and more take him away from feminine pursuits, that such as art. He didn't think he was a bad writer, but he resented the fact that he was a good writer.
He also believed that women liked blood sports.
Yes, and this is where the kind of misogynistic undertones of everything Hemingway sees in the world come in. So he documents this exhibition by Carpentier in Toronto in May 1920, saying that the women who'd came were only there to see a series of gladiatorial combat, and they smiled and applauded through it all during one fight in which there was a heavily mismatched fight between a heavy boxer and a smaller one. One of the women was apparently known to have said, "My, that one was over quickly," with obvious disappointment. So they wanted the blood and gore and violence. Hemingway, in a lot of his works, pits women as only concerned with aesthetics, whereas men can appreciate the underlying sort of tactics and nuance behind things, which is unfair.
Now, fascinated by boxing, but was he any good as a boxer?
No. No. So Jack Dempsey himself said there was a lot of Americans in Paris that I sparred with a couple of times just to be obliging, but there was one fellow I wouldn't mix with. That was Ernest Hemingway. So far, so good. He was about 25 or so and in good shape, and I was getting so I could read people, or anyway, men, pretty well. I had this sense that Hemingway, who really thought he could box, would come out of the corner like a madman. To stop him, I'd have to hurt him badly, and I didn't want to do that to Hemingway. That's why I never sparred with him. So kind of that thing, if you argue with an imbecile, you'll never lose because they won't admit that they've lost. Hemingway was the same.
Okay, so he knew he'd have to hurt him to stop him because he'd come out in a flurry of punches.
He didn't know what he was doing, basically. Yeah.
And the Dempsey would have to destroy him, and he didn't want to do that. Now, the idea that Hemingway was lost to what you might call the romance of the idea of boxing.
Yeah, so probably not dissimilar to the women he criticizes for only liking the violence, to be honest. One source notes that no romance to those seriously pursuing that boxing isn't romantic to those who are actually involved.
But only to the spectators.
Exactly. It's in the eye of the beholder. And Morley Callahan, who comes into our story now, said every chance he got, Hemingway, he would have boxed with someone. And he had all the lingo. He hung around gyms and watched fighters at work. Something within him drove him to want to be an expert at every occupation he touched. The truth was that we were two amateurs. Difference between us was that he'd given time to an imagination to boxing. I'd actually worked out a lot with good, fast college boxers.
So this guy is important to our story because we come to the infamous fight.
Yes, so he's a novelist who's arrived in Paris in the 20s to basically be Hemingway's understudy. Hemingway takes him under this wing because, don't know if you know, Hemingway, quite a big ego, loves being a mentor to this guy in the boxing ring and in literature. So Callahan writes this really famous memoir that summer in Paris, where he goes to Paris in 1929, meets Hemingway, becomes friends with the likes of Gertrude Stein, James Joyce, F. Scott Fitzgerald. And Callahan and Hemingway had sparred regularly at the American Club in Montparnasse, with the former's superiority perhaps getting under the notoriously thin skin of Hemingway. So in one fight, he splits Hemingway's lips, to which Hemingway spits blood back in his face and says, that's what bullfighters do when they're injured. It's a way of showing contempt. So
now we come to the actual famous fight when F. Scott Fitzgerald is brought along to have a look at an exhibition.
And you have to know, Hemingway and Fitzgerald were friends, but Fitzgerald absolutely adored Hemingway, saw all this masculine machismo, bravado, and saw everything that he was not, Fitzgerald. It was an unrequited love by all accounts. Apparently, in that summer in Paris, Callahan says he's going to meet Fitzgerald with Hemingway, and Hemingway says, you didn't give him my address, did you? Like, he kind of wanted to keep him at arm's length. Keep him away. So the account goes that they're fighting, and Ernest, wiping the blood from his mouth with his glove and probably made careless with exasperation and embarrassment from having Scott there, came in leaping at me. Stepping in, I beat him to the punch. The timing must have been just right. I caught him on the jaw. Spinning around, he went down, sprawled out on his back. Oh my God, Scott cried suddenly. When I looked at him alarmed, he was shaking his head helplessly. I let the round go 4 minutes. So 3 minutes were the round, so he let it go an extra. And Hemingway was not best pleased with this. I'm going to clean this up just a bit. All right, Scott, Ernest said savagely. If you wanted to see me get the snot knocked out of me, just say so. Only don't say you made a mistake. Tempers do cool, and the trio leave the American Club for a nearby bar, but their friendship with each other is never the same. Fitzgerald is racked with guilt over this. Ernest, his hurt ego, bruised ego, never really gets back in touch. It breaks up the friendship kind of totally.
What a tale. Cameron Hill from Off the Ball, thank you very much for telling us it.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.